for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 12 plus years in that games meeting combined, I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can. Come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, or comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other sort of shit with our logos on it. Now, Max, I'm having a problem this week.
Just the one?
Just the one at the moment. So, I've talked about this before. I have an overactive immune system. My nose and sinuses are fucked. For whatever reason, they feel that it is hay fever all the time. Mm-hmm. So I have this nasal steroid spray that I normally have every day, ran out, forgot to get the prescription renewed, had to wait to my doctor's appointment, so I can't go until tomorrow morning. So the last like 4 days have felt like my fucking nose has been on fire and breathing is hard and just all these things that I really took for granted suddenly are the worst thing in the world and I hate it.
Is there a reason why you didn't just like do a telehealth conference and just get a script sent to your phone?
As soon as I could get into the doctor, because they don't do telehealth unless you give a reason.
Yeah, the reason is I can't breathe.
Well, it's not like I can't breathe. I'm not like dying. It's just inconvenient and very frustrating.
I don't know. I feel like most of the time doctors will be like, yeah, no worries. Telehealth, 5 minutes, bim, bam, boom, send you the shit.
Yeah, it would make sense, I suppose. Well, because they don't have... you can't ring and book appointments anymore. It's all done through a fucking website.
Yeah, you could hot dock it and do it.
Hot dock it? What the hell? That sounds sexy. What's that?
The app is called Hot Dock.
Oh. Oh, okay. I'm unaware of that. That's a newie. Hot docking.
Yeah.
Hot docking. Hashtags for everything. But yeah, so that's been a frustrating thing. But what can you do? You work with it. You do with what you got. How's your sinuses this week, Max? Because your little one's been pretty shit and sick.
Oh, yeah. So Friday night we found ourselves in the priority personal care unit. Like the fake emergency room in Belmont. Because yeah, my daughter was complaining of a sore stomach, and then she proceeded to fucking throw up everywhere, and it was bright red, and it was bright red because she had just had her multivitamin, which is bright red.
Ah, that's confusing.
We took her anyway because she was complaining of stomach pain, so we get her there. We wait for half an hour, and we get seen, and they're like, due to the symptoms you've told us, we're pretty sure she has gastro, and I'm like, you can go fuck yourself. They're like, gastro is really contagious, so just be careful. I'm like, she's been fucking sick for a week. If she had gastro, we'd all be shitting ourselves right now. She doesn't have gastro. She has a sore stomach because she didn't fucking eat all her dinner and she ate ice cream. Like, I could have told you this. I don't need to be a doctor for this nonsense. So we went home. She's fine now.
See, the challenge that you've had with your kid is you've established that, like, if she feels unwell enough, you'll just go to the hospital.
My child's a Munchausen.
Yeah. You have, by accident, supported Munchausen in your daughter.
She's like, I'm sick. I have to see a doctor. Which could be good, but also is a pain in the ass sometimes when she's clearly not sick.
Yeah, which is why I would be like, with my kid, I'm like, no. Plus, I don't have private health like you. So, I'm like, you want to wait in a fucking emergency room for 6 hours? Bet you don't, because you're a kid.
I get there, and she's like, I play games on your phone. I'm like, fuck no, you're supposed to be sick. And then she fell asleep on top of me.
Yeah.
which is abnormal for her. She doesn't normally fall asleep at the drop of a hat.
So okay, well, in that case, that does add some layers to this potential sickness.
That was weird, but yeah, I don't think she's... I think she threw up because she got herself so worked up that she threw up.
Yeah. That seems like a reasonable occurrence in the life of Hadley.
Although, in saying that, I could hear her before having a coughing fit, so we'll see what happens.
I'm going to work out what's going on with that cough.
Yeah. Some doctors say it's asthma. Some say it's long COVID. Some say it's bullshit. Like, you know.
Well, see, to coincide with what we were discussing earlier, like, I had this perpetual cough for years. And I thought it, because I got, like, really fucking sick after a Soundwave, which is a heavy metal festival 1 year. And, like, that's when it started. Or at least when I thought it started. However, it turns out, overactive immune system. So, to get real gross about it, because my nose thought it was hay fever all the time, it would then generate mucus, which would then drip down into my throat, which would then go into my lungs and cause me to cough. And then because the immune system was going, so I think all those little nodules in your nose that I used to identify, they are red hot. They're fucking inflamed. They're shitty. So you're breathing in hot air as well, which then makes you want to cough because you're not really, it's not ideal to breathe in hot air. So like, it could, I'm not saying it's that, but it could be that. And if your daughter has any nasal spray, which you can have some, because I'm fucking hurt.
I just chalk it up to, she goes to kinder, and kids are fucking gross.
That's true. Kids are patient zero. We've discussed this before. They're fucking gross. Horrible. Horrible things. Love them, but horrible things. Yeah, but I myself, apart from burning face, not a whole lot happened this week. Pretty stock standard. One thing I did do, though, is we went to Warrnambool this week, which is a town here in country Victoria, for a wrestling promotion that I was working for, MXW, where we were doing in-person commentary. We haven't done in-person commentary for MXW in a while. But while we were there, I'm like, you know what? Let's do something. Let's put something to the test, Max. So I packed the position portal. I took it. I was about 180 k's from home. I was connected to the Wi-Fi of our good friend Craig, the Mullet Show, his parents. Now, his parents aren't really technology-inclined individuals, so they didn't really give a shit about their internet or what it is. They just know it works. And it wasn't horrible. Like, it wasn't smooth, like, in terms of absolutely fucking buttery smooth. But it was enough to go in and play some turn games. I went in there and did my dailies on WWE 2K24. I did my dailies on MLB The Show 24. Went in there and I started doing some of the Diamond Dynasty stuff. We'll talk about that game in a moment. But I went in, I started opening cards. So, and then I even played like a couple of games. As in a couple of games of baseball using the portal. And impressively, it wasn't too gnarly. So MGB in the chat asks, did it give you much input lag? Well, it wasn't exceptional, but once you realize what that delay is about in terms of its feeling, I just accounted for it in my swing. So I was like, oh, okay.
Who drove to Warrnambool?
Craig.
How'd it work in the car ride on the way there?
I didn't use it in the car because that would make no sense.
I feel like that should be its use case, though.
That would see, like,
you're like I have 180 hours to 180 kilometers to travel. Have this really cool device that lets me play games remotely. Can't use it.
Yes, it's when you get to the location, the traveling part. Now, granted, had the reception between Geelong and Warrnambool not have moments where it just fucking goes away completely. It
doesn't exist.
Where there is just no cell reception, then they would probably have put it to the test. But knowing that there are windows where you can't, like, if you don't have some Spotify preloaded, it's not a good time. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to try push the limits of that.
Fair.
But it will be tested at some point. I will find a way to fuck with it. I'm flying to Sydney. Flying to Brisbane after Easter, and I think I'm flying with Qantas, and they tend to have Wi-Fi on their flights. So I might put it to the test.
Yeah, good luck. The fucking Qantas Wi-Fi barely opens Facebook on your phone.
That's why I want to test it for funsies. I think it'd be a laugh.
Fair enough.
But look, I'm still pretty happy with my purchase. I love it. I'm enjoying playing it around the house. Taking it, like, I didn't play it extensively because mostly we were there for wrestling. So we did what we had to do. We spent the whole day at the wrestling and then came home, went to bed. Like, it was a busy, busy day. So there's not a, and by the end of the day, I was so knackered that I'm not going to fucking sit here and try to focus on this screen. But that does bring into the conversation, though, Max, what have we been playing this week?
Well, do you want to start with MLB The Show? Because I have also been playing MLB The Show.
Oh, all right. Well, big thank you to the team over at PlayStation Australia for providing us a review code on PlayStation and Xbox for MLB The Show 24. So, for a bit of background, I myself have been nowhere near as much as a baseball fan now as I had been a number of years ago. However, when I first got moved to Melbourne in my early uni years, I used to work a lot of overnights for McDonald's just in order to make money while I was studying. And there's not much on telly at night, except back then they kind of just launched Channel 10, which is one of our local free-to-air stations, had just launched One, which was their very sports-focused channel. So overnight time, they would run baseball games. We would see them, you know, working drive-through or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll just have this on in the background and pay attention. And then very quickly, I caught an interest in baseball. And I saw an individual by the name of Prince Fielder. He's this like 6'3", fucking 400 pounds. He's just a unit of a fucking dude. He's just muscle. And he was the fourth hitter for the Detroit Tigers. So the idea is that, you know, the first three ideally would get on base. And then he would go and just launch it out of the park and bring everyone home. And that was kind of what his position was used for. And I'm like, whatever fucking team this guy's in, I want that team. That's my team. So there I became a fan of the Detroit Tigers, and I watched baseball religiously for about 3 years until I got my first full-time job during the day, and suddenly I was no longer able to stay up and watch the baseball because I'd wake up the next morning and all the games were done and I'd have the score. I'm like, well, what the fuck am I going to watch it now if I know the score? So very quickly I wrapped up my baseball life. However, that does tie into Every time I do play MLB The Show, which I have also been playing since MLB The Show. Hang on. There is 13 on my shelf that I can see here. So I'm going to say since 2013. And I do also have 2K's Major League Baseball 2K13 there, up there as well. So that's how long, like 11 years I've been a viewer or understander, a fan of baseball. So since then, every time I've played, I've missed 2 years, I think. So I didn't get last year, and there may have been, I don't know, like 15 or something. I'm pretty sure I did get 15 because one of them had Miguel Cabrera on the cover, and I made sure I got that one because he's a Detroit player, one of the best fucking hitters. He's fantastic. Yes, so every year I boot up MLB The Show, jump in, go into the Road to the Show, which is their campaign version. I make Big Daddy Betson, which is me. And the beauty of baseball games is that, because all the players kind of look like me, super easy because they're all rotund and have a face. So super easy to make myself. And I go on to become the best shortstop that the MLB has ever seen. And I play for the Detroit Tigers. And this year is no different as what I have been doing. But Max, I preface all that with the conversation that you have never played a baseball game in your life, as far as I'm aware, nor do you really get nor understand the game of baseball.
Okay, well, one, I played baseball in high school. So
I meant in a game space, but yes, okay.
I know how it works. I played MLB 2019, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So as for most of my foray into sports games, it's kind of just to play pickup games against friends or player controlled PC non player character teams.
Yep,
PC teams. So booted up today, and obviously they're like, "Hey, we'll show you the ropes. We'll show you all the new stuff. This pick your control scheme, do all that stuff, and then they give you like a quick like a crash course into the way you've picked your accessibility options. So, you know, it's like pitching. How do you want to pitch? Do you want to pitch using what I've dubbed the skate controls, where you flick the stick as to how you flick the stick as to how you want to pitch.
Like where you want to swing it in the box.
And then it's like, so I'm like, oh, this sounds good. This is what I would. This is how I play NBA. So let's do that. So it gives you, for instance, the fastball is literally pull back, flick forward.
Right in the middle.
Super easy. Right in the middle. I do it. It's too slow. 25%. I'm like, fucking what? I'm like, okay. No worries. Try it again. Too fast. Not accurate enough. I'm like, it's a fucking straight line down and up. I'm doing, because it shows you what you've done as well. Like, I've done the straight line down and up. How is that fucking wrong? You fucked up. I'm like, okay, I'll slow it down a bit. I went too fast. Too slow. I'm like, fuck this control. Next one. The next one was essentially use the left analog stick to pick where you want to throw it, and then you get like the old golf swing power bar.
Yeah,
like, I'll try that. We'll do this one. Yeah, I fucking suck at that too. Can't do it. I'm like, okay, let's just we're gonna aim and we're just gonna fucking push the button of the throw that we want, and that's it.
That's what I used.
So that's what I picked. Done. Batting. I think you get like three or four options. One's like zone hit. So you move the left stick to the zone.
There's like two little parentheses, and you've got like little brackets, and you've got to move it around. So you could try guess where they're throwing in the batting square.
Thank you. Where you guess where you think they're gonna fucking throw the ball, and then you've got to swing and time it correctly. Like that one wasn't for me. Then there was an easier version of that where it's just left and right. You just got to pick which side of the square they're gonna throw it to. That one didn't work for me either. I'm just pushing the button of the hit that I want to do at the perfect time. Beautiful. Can do that one easy. And then for the rest of them, they're all pretty straightforward. It's like, do you want to see where the ball's going to go as it's flying, if you want to try and catch it? Yep, cool. I selected to like for throwing, it's just third base is this button, second base is this button, first base is this button, home plate is this button. I'm like, cool, easy, done. And then it throws you into a tutorial match. Played about half of that before I had to get off and do other stuff. I was winning at the time. I hit like four home runs in a row. I was pretty happy with myself.
So clearly you put that difficulty down.
Oh, I set it to what the game recommended and put it on what I think they call it a hybrid difficulty, where if you're playing well, it'll just...
Oh, it'll adapt as you go. Dynamic
difficulty, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it adapts as you go. So I think it eventually bumped me up from... I think it started me at beginner. It bumped me up to rookie or whatever there.
Yeah.
System is.
Yeah, beginner, rookie, veteran, and then something else. Yeah.
The character models look fucking sweet as.
Yeah.
That, like, it looks really good. But as I've only played, like, the tutorial and learned how to play the game, I haven't really played much of it. But what I have played is fun. That's fairly intuitive, pretty easy to onboard someone who hasn't played in a very long time. I think the system, the way it asks you to set up how you want to play the game is very good at the start. It's like, let's just get all of this fun stuff out of the way, pick which works best for you, and we'll go from there. So yeah.
So in terms of my choices, I can't confirm this, but I feel like I've never really had to pick the mode types that I preferred. Like, it almost like a new. So I had a feel. I have a feeling that it may have gone, hey, we can see that your save file for like the last year was this. Did you want to just import that? I was like, yeah, sure. Once again, that's a presumption because I don't remember picking anything. However, having not played it last year, this year it went, what are your things? I'm like, shit, what are my things? So yeah, I had the same pitching as you, because that's the way I, once again, going back to 2013, and I understand that each of the changes that they've made in the, say, the pitching or the batting style is more around how more of a realistic simulated experience are you wanting. For me, I'm like, no, I kind of have fun like in a semi-simulated experience. So my pitching, because it's the one I kind of enjoy the least, is just like, you pick where you want it in the square, and then you press the appropriate button. Done. Batting, on the other hand, I have the directional, so I can pick where I want to hit it in I want to go to over like to right field or whatever, and then you pick the appropriate face button. Boom. And if you time it right, bang, it's where you want it to be. That's how I like to play. What position did you choose?
It doesn't make you select a position at that point.
Oh, no, that's in the character creator. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so in terms of what I've done, I did jump into the story mode. In this case, it's called Storylines, I believe. I touched upon this last week, I think. I did, yes. So I touched upon this last week with their telling the story of the Negro League, as it was called, which feels really uncomfortable to say out loud, which is fun. But since then, I have dove into Road to the Show, have built myself. I went and did the MLB Draft Combine, which is, so you obviously have a draft where you go and you get picked players, whatever. The Combine is essentially your ability to go in and prove yourself, like go in a position, like, you know, it's almost like a scouting circumstance, I imagine. Did okay. I came out as essentially with a C grade. Because I'm playing on veteran difficulty, because I've been playing this game a while. I was like, yeah, I'll throw it up to veteran. Seems like a good pick. And yeah, so currently I'm doing, there's a series of games that you play to then know where you're going to be drafted. So currently I'm sitting 7th as a potential pick in the draft, not too bad. My batting average is about 0.33, or around approximately, because I think my mind is slightly different. So for the first game that I played, I did get on base one, once out of three times that I got to the plate. I did score myself an RBI, which was nice. It's runners batted in for those playing at home. So there is a statistic in baseball that if you don't get on base, if you manage to get the ball into a position where someone else can get in, get home, score a run, you get rewarded for that in your statistics. So one of the things I love about baseball. Very similar to hockey, in the words that Wayne Gretzky, his most key scoring metric is the amount of assists that he did rather than how many goals he scored himself. So that's been cool. But the one that I dove in additionally over this weekend and a little bit before I left was Diamond Dynasty. So Diamond Dynasty is the trading card equivalent. So think Ultimate Team for FIFA, think My Faction for WWE, where you get cards and you build a little makeshift team, and then you actually go and play games to sort of simulate particular challenges to unlock more cards and more power-ups, etc. Now, because PlayStation were kind enough to provide us like the super digital deluxe edition or whatever, I had about 37 or 38 packets that I could open, and I had to stop because I wanted, because the mental reward that I was getting from opening these packets to create my baseball team was unmatched, and is concerning, because it was all was doing things. So I did stop. I still have 20 that are unopened. So I've stopped myself. Let's space this out. I'll come back tomorrow and I'll open one or two, and then maybe the day after open one or two, because very similar to WWE 2K, I don't want to spend money, because I know if I get too in the weeds on this one, I might be in a position where I'll go, oh no, I'm going to want to spend money, and then I won't, and then I will, and I don't want to. Because right now, like, I was even debating earlier today, because I opened up Helldivers, which we haven't really played, but I opened it up, and, you know, bing, here's another 50 medals, because something else happened that you weren't a part of. I was like, oh shit, and they've got their new season pass, or what's it called, the fuck it's called, and it's like, oh, it's like, you know, $10. I was like, because even if I just get it and then just don't play it and get these accumulated medals and go in there and use it.
That's the thing. These aren't seasonal. Like, they stick around.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do the one for, like, what is season one.
Yeah. So it seems like a worthwhile investment. I am really enjoying the game. I'm loving its marketing. So, like, maybe that's worth investment. But, like, with this, like, it does feel different, because I'm buying... If I was into physical cards, it'd be a different story, because that's not a difficult thing to sort of think about, because as they are physical, there is potential for any sort of money back if I was to ship, resell them or something, and there's something tangible. It's something a bit more, from a stats perspective, the chances feel more achievable of getting a rare or whatever compared to digital, where they can skew you because fuck you if they so want to do. In the chat, they did ask, have you unpacked Babe Ruth? I don't believe so. I would have got really excited if I had, but I don't believe I had. To add to one of my comments around Gretzky, Reverend Park, but Gretzky also had the most goals in his career. That's true. He totally did. And in a season, and the fastest to 50 goals, no big deal. Gretzky is a fucking dope, hockey player. He's insane. Gamer did ask the question, did you ever do the face scan for the app? No, I have not. I did consider it, but I also was lazy at the time, so I didn't. I just made myself. It's easy.
I did it for last year's 2K, and it was a fucking nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... MGB mentions that the dopamine hit when you open packs. Ooh, yeah, it's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous. Gamer also added, I was the same for FC Ultimate Team. Brought packs so I could unpack a man, you legend. Oh, dude, it's one of those things. It's real hard. It's real, real tough. And, you know, it's a, even if similar to my mention in the WWE 2K24 review, which is out now, go check it out on the YouTube and the podcast services. I was like, yo, 2K, if you give me some VC, I'll open 1,000 packets. I'll do it on stream. It'll be awesome. They didn't get back to me, which is totally fair because I wouldn't. But look, it's interesting that you mentioned the game looks insane. For whatever reason, there are moments where this game looks immaculate to me, but there are moments where I feel it looks worse than previous years. Like it feels like it's missing some of the high-end detail on even a lot of the named major players. But once again, that could be rose-tinted glasses and my memory of playing the game compared to what it actively is. So I would need to download, say, you know, MLB The Show 21 or 22 and then be like, well, does it look as good as I remember? Because I sincerely do not believe that they would have downgraded the quality of the title in the last couple of years. Even if, you know, since putting it on Xbox as an example, because that's a reasonable thought process, having to meet what the Xbox Series S whatever needs, but I refuse that. I honestly don't believe that to be the case, because you played it on Xbox and you said it looks dope.
Yeah, it looks good.
Let's see. MGB in the chat also asked, I tell you, as someone who spends a fair bit on Fortnite, you will spend so much money on microtransactions in these games if you get fully into spending money in them. And like, that's something I don't have the spare cash regardless, so It's not a luxury that I have. And I know that if I do it, I will probably have a lot of anxiety about it, because that's just how I go with finances, because I don't have a lot of money.
Man, I cannot escape the microtransaction talks today.
Yes, I'm sure. Did you put that in the newsletter?
Not really.
And we'll touch upon it in the quick bits. We'll throw in the quick bits. But yeah, I'll be spending some more time with MLB The Show. We'll also be doing a combined review piece with Player 2, the recently award-winning Player 2. They had some good luck at the Lizzies this year. So congratulations to Matt Hewson, Paul James, and the team. Yeah, we'll be doing some stuff with Paul, fellow PlayStation and sports fan, which is interesting. I didn't realize he was even open to baseball, so super keen to do something with him. Max, you have been playing more of Final Fantasy, yeah?
Yeah, I rolled credits on it last night.
Hey, nice. All right, final thoughts time. How'd it go?
So, total playtime was just shy of 50-ish hours. And that's not Golden Path, but not by no means is it anywhere near 100%. Game's great. They took a lot of bold choices in changing up the story, rectifying and retconning a few things that I think made it better. I've thoroughly enjoyed the changes that they made. I was wrecked by the end of it. It ended
emotionally wrecked?
Yeah. It ended a little bit differently than I anticipated, but I think it is for the better.
Okay.
It ended exactly where I thought it was going to, but not in the way that I thought it was going to.
Interesting.
Which was cool.
Obviously, no spoilers, but in terms of, Did it alter it on emotional beats and sort of the intensity that comes with that? Or, like, has it deviated from the original Final Fantasy VII in a mixed way?
It's hard to...
You can't touch upon it without spoilers? Oh, that's fine.
It's hard to answer that question without spoiler.
Yep, that's fine.
But the back end of this game, so they do a section in the later half of the game where they do... like it's spoilers, but it's not. It's a game that's been out for like 20 odd years.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the temple, which you get to in the original game, one of the changes they made is each individual character goes through their own personal trial, and it kind of shows their biggest loss that they've had in their lifetime. And that fucking wrecked me.
Oh, so mute in the chat did ask the question, did you cry?
No, I didn't.
It takes a lot for you to cry at a game. I cry at the drop of the hat. Like, a good commercial will get me going these days.
Death Stranding had me fucking bawling my eyes out.
I imagine that if I played, I'd probably cry, because I'm a big old cry.
I was close. But... Because they've changed the story up, they've allowed... The things that they've added have been essentially more character developmental backstory, which has been really, really good. So you see, essentially, just in this one snippet, this one section of the game, you see exactly why these characters are the way they are. It basically shows you their most horrible point and their lowest point in their lives, and that's kind of made them who they are now as you're playing with them. My biggest gripe with the game is that they're gigantic dick teasers by the end of it. They give you the two characters, the two of my favorite characters in the series, and they're like, sorry, they're not playable. Go fuck yourself. They'll join your party, but you cannot use them.
And is that spoilers for you to mention those two characters?
I don't think so. They're the two characters that if you've played the original game, they're the two characters that you get that haven't been introduced in the first part of Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay.
So one of them you meet in a completely different way, and they're either doing his segment of the game later.
Okay, is that Yuffie DLC sort of setup, you reckon?
Yeah, so what I believe he was in some of the trailers. So Sid is the pilot, and he eventually joins your team in the original game. And you have this really cool, sweet backstory that he wants to be a pilot, he wants to be an astronaut. He's building this fucking rocket ship to go into space. Shinra, the big bad electric company, come in and go, "Fuck you, we're not doing it anymore." Ruins his town, ruins his livelihood, blah, blah, and all that jazz. And he kind of resents everything about them because of this, and he kind of joins up with you. In this game, he's just a way to travel around the world quickly.
Because I remember you being quite upset at the end of Remake because you couldn't play Sid.
Yeah. He's essentially just like a freedom fighter pilot, and he's just like, "Yeah, I'll take you to where you need to go. Just send up some smoke, and I'll come pick you up in my plane." Like, it's very nonchalant
that impacts lost a little bit.
A little bit. So hopefully they, because again, like, he's there, but you can't. He's not a playable character. He's essentially just your fast travel companion.
Mm.
The game is fucking stacked with mini games. Some of them don't need to be there. Some of them are a bit tedious. Some of them are fun. The fast travel, like when you're flying to point to point, it gives you control of the plane but serves no real purpose.
Because you're still just going that spot, so you can't like bugger off or anything?
Yeah, you can't deviate from the path. You can just move from left to right. That's all there is, but it still takes you to your final destination. You can put the controller down and walk away. You're not going to crash. But, I think...
MGB in the chat did ask, I heard there's basically a Fall Guys minigame, but with frogs.
Yes.
Sweet.
Yeah, pretty much. Played
more of that card game? Was it Queen's Gambit or some bullshit?
Queen's Blood.
Crap, that's close.
No, Queen's Gambit. no, I stopped. I was getting too caught up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to see this through. I've got other things that I need to move on to. So, yeah, I've been kind of plodding away at it.
The game's so it's the same way that when I played Final Fantasy X on PS2, I think I spent more time playing Blitzball than doing anything else.
Yeah. Well, see, at least Blitzball had a purpose. Like, to get ultimate weapons and stuff like that, you needed to
play. Oh, I didn't know that. I just played it.
Like, all you get is cards, which serve no purpose outside of the card game.
Oh, okay.
As far as I'm aware. Some of the boss fights at the back end of the game are fucking rough.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't
rough acquired... Rough as in tedious or rough as difficult or...
Difficult. So I haven't acquired this. I have two more summons to acquire, both requiring combat trials. One of them I've attempted 4 times and have failed miserably every single time because the fight's a piece of shit. So essentially, the way that the combat's supposed to work in this game is you fulfill a certain task in the battle, it pressures the enemy. By pressuring the enemy, you can fill their stagger bar faster. Once they're staggered, you deal a significant more amount of damage to them. So essentially, that's the rinse and repeat. For this particular summon, the way you need to pressure them is by exciting them in battle.
Hot.
So you need to dodge their attacks. You need to land special attacks. You need to do all these things. And he'll get excited and therefore become pressured. If you don't do this, he becomes bored and one hit kills you.
Oh.
But for some reason, it's really unforgiving. So if you get hit twice in a row, it's instantly he charges up his one hit kill move and it's game over. Oh. I haven't quite figured out the fight pattern yet. So that one's been kicking my ass. And the other one, the last one that I need to get, is tied to a specific side quest that's in each region, and I just haven't finished those yet because the last one doesn't open up until chapter 12, and there's only 14 chapters in the game, so it can't be done until the end of the game anyway.
Yeah. All right, well,
so I've got to go back now. Once you finish the game, you unlock hard mode, you unlock chapter select, and you can kind of go through and do all that stuff.
Well, because I was going to say, so now that when it comes to the game itself, as you have rolled credits, like so you're not done with it, you are going to go back and continue.
I will go back and get the things that I'm missing because I've been enjoying playing the game and I'd like to see where this goes. But from a story standpoint, I've rolled credits, I've seen it through, and now I have to wait 4 years for the final part.
So very similar to what we discussed in 2020 when Final Fantasy Remake came out. Subjectively, I guess, and objectively, because I don't understand for yourself with your emotional connection to Final Fantasy, for both those categories, does this fit in a Game of the Year conversation?
For me personally, yes. Overall, like putting my feelings aside from it, depending on like having known what's come out this year so far, yes. But the unknowns could knock it out of that conversation.
Okay, so you think it'll be a precipice game? Like it's not a clear leader. Like what was the game that you played recently?
It's no Baldur's Gate 3. That's
thank you.
Like a definitive. This is it. This is the
yeah. Because I think there's a higher chance of like print, because you know, we talk about Prince of Persia being in end of year discussions.
Like that's like going to drop.
Like
I think it would be like using the Game Awards categories. It's definitely got a spot in like RPG of the year, but it may not necessarily fit the bill of Game of the Year.
Okay, interesting. Well, it's still good praise nonetheless.
But yeah, it's absolutely fantastic, and it's a must play if you've played Final Fantasy VII. It really kind of goes deeper into the story, and kind of tidies it up a bit from the messiness that was the original at times.
Okay, excellent.
Which is cool. But that's it. That's all I played this week. Fucking Final Fantasy took up all of my time.
Well, that's not entirely true. There are other games that we have been playing this week. So, thanks once again to the team at PlayStation Australia. Max, you and I had been playing Rise of the Ronin. It's the latest from Koei Tecmo and Team Ninja. It's a second-party exclusive on the PlayStation 5. We've had this game for a while. Probably like 3 weeks. Run about? Month, maybe? Not a month. Month seems too long. 3 weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks tops. So we do have a preview conversation that is up on the channel, but the review embargo did go up a couple of days ago, but neither you or I had played we'd played enough to have a lengthy review then and there. However, times have gone past a little bit, and we can at least touch upon things here. But we didn't have enough to have a full dedicated video that we would be happy with releasing.
Yep.
You did release your first ever Let's Play this week for it. Congratulations. It is an achievement. No, like, that's not like being fucking dismissive. That is legit. It's a lot of anxiety. It's a lot of pressure to put that out there in the world when you've never done it before. So well done.
Very subpar gameplay. Not my usual. Was not on form.
Yeah. Pressure of doing it on camera is a whole thing. But we've touched upon the game before, but Max, you're going to give the quick beats of the game, and then we'll get into our thoughts. And
So essentially at its core, you are playing as an assassin who is essentially trying to stop the Westerners coming in back into Japan after it was essentially closed off to the rest of the world. It's really hard. I like Team Ninja games. I'm a huge fan of Nier, huge fan of Nier 2. And I think what sold me on Nier and Nier 2 was its supernatural underlay.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas this is a very grounded, real-world story. Granted, you know, the characters they use are fictional, but this story actually took place. Kind of takes it away from me a bit. It's one of those things that, and I know a lot of people have been saying this, but this game feels dated already because Ghost of Tsushima came out years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think everything that Team Ninja are doing here, like, this is their first swing at an open world game, and granted, it's kind of sort of open world. And it's got a bunch of bullshit to collect out in the open world to make it feel like it's lived in. And it's got tedious, you know, save the victim stuff to unlock town settlements. To, you know, you gotta clear out the rabble before you can talk to anyone or do anything like that. And it just feels empty. The game has co-op multiplayer, but not in the open world. You have to be in the mission instances.
Yeah.
It's just, the game looks nice, but it feels done before.
Yeah.
And like, the story is doing nothing for me at the moment. The combat and the gameplay is what's keeping me going forward. It's that Souls-like, that Neo combat that Team Ninja are known for. And that combat's fun enough, but it seems wildly unbalanced at times, because it's taken that semi RPG route that Assassin's Creed went to recently, where areas of the map are like kind of level locked to a degree. So, for instance, one of the missions I'm up to is, I'm like level 4, and it's like, go here to go to your next mission, but to get there I have to go through a level 10 area, and everything just fucking shitstorms me.
Mm.
It's like, am I going the wrong way? I'm following the path where it's telling me to go, and the area, my destination is a level 4 area, the area that I'm leaving is level 4, but all the areas in between range from like level 6 to 10, and everything is killing me in one hit.
Interesting.
And I was like, this seems unfair, this seems unbalanced. So I've been a little bit frustrated with it. I don't know whether I need to just suck it up and just run through and just get to where I need to go to push on, but that seems like it seems like something that I shouldn't have to do.
But once again, isn't that within the core of what a Soulsborne-like game is?
Yeah, but to a degree, I suppose I could essentially just get good and fight my way through. But it seems so crazily unbalanced that it seems, with my current skill level in the game, that it's just not feasible. Like, I haven't quite got the handle of the timing for the parries and I can't think of their term for it in this game, but the key pulses to regen
blade,
your stamina.
Blade with, flash.
Blade flashing and all that stuff. So, like, I'll keep playing it. I'll give it more time. But for now, it's not doing anything for me.
Yeah. So, like, I'm in a similar boat. So, the challenge that I had going into this game was... it has been well communicated, well discussed here on the show. My stance around sort of very Japanesey games. Like, I don't care for samurais. I don't care for Ronins or that style of story. Like, I'm not the guy that loves katanas or whatever, right? Not me. Contrary to how I look, it ain't me, right? So there's already my hesitance going in. Unlike Ghost of Tsushima, which had that layout, but the world was so awesome and it just felt so different that it compelled me to keep playing, Rise of the Ronin is failing to do that for me on a narrative perspective, because I was hoping that would be something that would lure me through. But even in a gameplay perspective, I understand at its principle... setup, it is very similar to that of a Soulsborne. However, I'm finding that I'm not seeing any major depth in the combat system, at least for me. I'm seeing light attacks, heavy attacks, counters. You change your stance accordingly. Like, you know, it'll tell you above the person whether the stance you're currently using is effective or ineffective. So you just change that and you do the same thing again. Like, I'm not... Yes, you kind of have to see the patterns. However, I'm not seeing it, like, you know, get to the point where I'm like, oh, I don't feel like I'm mastering the game. And that's kind of what the Soulsborne games do. Like, or the Dark Souls, etc. Like, it's all about you mastering the combat system. And then when you look over at the likes of Elden Ring, a game that also didn't resonate with me, it's all about you mastering the world. So if you take the same principles here, well, if it's not matching, in my opinion, the what makes... Because I had a lot of fun with Bloodborne as an example, but that world is what kept me going. Like, because the enemy styles were cool, the world setting was fantastic, every little minutia in that game was incredible. Same as Lies of P, even though I didn't play it outside of the demo, just because I had other games playing at the time. But, like, the setup of that game was enough to entice me to keep going. Where here, yeah, I feel like I'm not mastering the it's not setting it up for me to find a way to master the combat. But then it's also not setting up in a way for me to master the world. Because as you mentioned, like, you do have little hub, little cities, little villages, and then you do get to a sort of a more densely populated area. But the time in between and the emptiness in between is detrimental. You will find little encounters where it's, as you mentioned, it's save the victim, where they're like, oh, I'm being attacked by people. There's a little flag that appears on your screen, and you go there and you'll get karma within the area that you are. So therefore, you'll have open to more vendors, I believe, and things like that. It's fine. I just go in there and do them, and I keep moving on. The problem with that is, like, yeah, there's all this empty area where not much really happens. Because what's the example? I think Witcher 3 has this example. Like, you never really go, you know, 45 seconds without something that grabs your attention. Where here, that's not the case. Like, you're on the, you know, whether you're running or you're on your horse or you're gliding. Like, it's just, I'm just going to get to the next story beat.
Yeah.
And I do feel that that is something that Team Ninja will have to want to work on, mostly because the benefit and the beauty of previous games like Nioh, where they have those little open worlds, like these little, like, instance-based circumstances where you go in and there's a boss and there's enemies, but you can't, like, just wander off. Like, it's always, it is still very directional, as in it sets you off as get to here. And this game does that, but within an open world setting, which doesn't quite land. Once again, especially coming off the back of Elden Ring, which is interesting because the things that I critiqued Elden Ring on were, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. You know, and everywhere I go, something's kicking my shit in. Where here, it's like, oh, I know where I've got to go. why should I go? And there are things that have caught my attention. Like, I do like sifting through the gear. The gear's fun, mostly from a style perspective rather than like a stats perspective. I just go, okay, well, that one's got the biggest number. Tick, win. Cool. Nice. Am I a samurai with boots and a bowler hat? Yes, I am. Sick. You get your own little longhouse, which you can semi-customize. That's cool. I like that part. That was interesting. But from a visual perspective as well, you know, everyone's shitting on it, saying it looks like a PS3 game. Dude, everyone, go back and actually look at a fucking PS3 game, all right? They look nothing like this. Does this game look immaculate? No, it does not. It looks like an early PS4 game. I'd probably give it that. But it's, once again, it is about balance. It's about that cost-benefit analysis. I am willing to sacrifice the cost of a visually sharp game for a good gameplay experience. Yeah. A House Flipper as an example, kind of looks like shit most of the time, but the gameplay is so fun and compelling that it keeps moving forward. Gas Station Simulator is another example of that. That game is objectively shit. It looks like crap. It's glitchy. It's kind of fucking a mess. But I love it because for me, that gameplay is so compelling that I will work through those things to keep going at it, to ensure that I serve the most customers, fill the most, whatever I decide to do. That is the path that I take, and I'm willing to compromise that for that. With Rise of the Ronin, the gameplay, as I mentioned, is not enough for me to go, I'm willing to sort of step aside from that and keep working. You know, like, there are moments where the game looks great. There are some cutscenes that look exceptional. And then there are moments where you meet NPCs or whatever that just don't seem to pop in that same way. And it does come to a point where I find all the enemies to look kind of the same. Not racist. But the only thing I pay attention to is what weapon they're using, because it appears that what weapon they're using dictates my stance, and that's it. Like, I'm not looking at the enemy types. I'm like, I don't even give a fuck who you are. Are you supposed to be a lieutenant or something? Don't care. You have a big sword. I'm going to switch to this stance. Done. Cool. Now, it sounds like, weirdly enough, I'm further in this game than you, because my level is noticeably higher than level 4, or you're using that as an example. I'm not sure. But I certainly attempted to give it the time that it should deserve, right? Once again, the code came our way, so I'll play it, not out of obligation, but at least to get to a point where I feel I have a competent critique of it. Some of the things that were said, that like, oh, you know, there are certain parts of the game that benefit after X amount of hours of play. Not good enough. That is unacceptable, especially in this day and age when our time is as limited as it can be. I never want to hear about a game not getting good until 15 to 30 hours in. No, that does not fly anymore. Doesn't fly. But yeah, so I am seeing, like, part of me thinks that I'm in the wrong, because we're looking at the scores that are coming out of all these publications, and they are substantially higher than what we're talking about right now. So, like, are we in the wrong, Max?
I mean, that's the thing. It's
subjective. Always is, but... Sorry, subjective, I should say. It always is.
Yeah. What resonates with one person doesn't resonate with the other. You know, look back at Death Stranding.
Mm.
You know, we sung its praises, and then someone gave it a bullshit, undeserved low Oscar.
Yeah, they gave it a 3 out of 10. And they're completely wrong.
Yeah. Look, for me, like, if I was to give this game a number score, it'd be a 7.
Yeah, 6 or 7. It's exactly a 7.
Like, the game's fine. It's just not blowing my skirt up.
Yeah, it's not crash for me. Like, things seem to work. Like, you know, all the RPG mechanics within it are interesting. You know, like, there's it's not broken. It's not fucked. It's playable. It runs. It is the perfect example of fine. At least for me. One of the other things that did hit my inbox this week was Alone in the Dark. So that came. So big thank you to the team over at Play On Australia for providing us the review code of that. With the nature of playing the other couple of games, we haven't jumped into it just yet. It is very much my this week game. So having played the demo at PAX and then playing again at home, and I kind of, because the PAX were under a timed window, because it was all sort of, you know, booked time to go and mess with the game. So when I played the demo again here at home, I made sure to look at every little nook and cranny. You know, I've talked about my love and appreciation for Alone in the Dark and New Nightmare, which was the PS2 game, was also on PlayStation 1 as well. And I love that. And this game, from at least the, I don't know, hour or so that I've played of it, it does seem to be doing exactly what it set out to do. Now, once again, these are very, very early impressions. You get to play as two characters. I forget the woman's name at this very second, but Edward Carnby is the guy, played by the dude who did Hellboy and was in Stranger Things, David Harbour. Nailed it. So, David Harbour and the other individual. So, you do seem to have a split story, because Alone in the Dark, at least the originals, was very clearly a clone of Resident Evil in Resident Evil 2. So, with Resident Evil 2 having the idea of playing with Leon or Claire, where here, it's a similar concept. The game itself knows that it's this, it has this energy of this weird sort of B-grade horror movie, and it seems to be leaning into that, which I really, really like, because even in the style of the, you know, it is very much a double A game, but once again, I knew that going in, so I'm happy with what I'm seeing. The fact it does look a little janky kind of fits for me that 80s B-grade horror energy, and that has me really excited to keep pushing forward. As I explore this little creepy house in wherever the hell it is. But is there any other games you played this week, Max? And that's kind of it, isn't it?
No, this is it. That was it for me.
Let me do a quick check of my app, as I always do, as a good reminder. Let's see. Oh, one thing we did also get in our inbox was Hi-Fi Rush. So big thank you to the team over at Bethesda Australia and... Double Jump, I believe, is their PR. I think it is Double Jump. I'm not sure. Or Power Up. I think it's Double Jump. So, yeah, the email came through being like, hey, you know, Hi-Fi Rush has hit PlayStation. I was like, shit, I heard nothing but awesome things about that game. Especially knowing what Tango Games Works history is with the likes of Evil Within. And this looked not that. So, let's give it a burl. My first impressions after a couple of hours of gameplay is... I adore the art style. It is like cel shaded, but not in the kind of not aged well version of Borderlands. It is much nicer. Very similar to like Metal Hellsinger as an example. It is a rhythm based combat system. So you actually get awarded points for attacking on the beat, which is fun because the whole premise of the game is music related, as you enter this walled off city where you can, you know, those that are ailed can be repaired with the use of cybernetics. You have a jacked up arm as the character of Chai. You go in, you get your arm replaced, but because you're a big music head, during the surgery to get your arm, your music player falls onto your chest and then gets built into you and is what powers your arm. And then as a result, you make this cool little guitar that is your weapon that's built out of scraps. That's really cool. And so one of the first songs that jump in is Gold on the Ceiling by the Black Keys, which really, I think it really appropriately sets the tone. It's just fun because you'll notice he runs to the beat, like he moves to its ability to synchronize music and gameplay is awesome. Is absolutely awesome. Once again, I still got a bit more time to spend with it, but there's a couple little things that I like that just make me chuckle. I like the robot that you hang out with. His name's 808, which is the name of the little synthesizer that's most commonly used for, you know, the old school beats. That it's a little thing just kind of popped me really hard, and most people probably pick that up. But in terms of showcase, the reason I wanted to jump on this was, especially with these Xbox games coming over to PlayStation, not as if they weren't worth my time before. I wasn't capable of playing them at the time because I didn't have an Xbox. My PC is pretty good, but I don't spend a lot of time playing games on my PC. Oh, actually, there is one more game I played this week. It's been a busy-ass week, Mac. Busy, busy week. However, well, having this come across, I want to experience the good games that Microsoft release. Sadly, they do appear to be few and far between. However, I want to experience them. So when this opportunity came my way, I was like, sick. I'm gonna play Hi-Fi Rush. I'm going to give it a completely unbiased look at it from a PlayStation perspective. Should this game have been on PlayStation the whole time? Yeah, probably. Because I think it would have done a lot better. Like, I can certainly see the beginnings of why it's so critically acclaimed and quite critically well received. But I've got a lot more to go with it as well. So, busy, busy time, as I mentioned. The other thing that I have been playing this week, Max, another random code that rocked up in our inbox. Horizon Forbidden West has made its way to PC.
Apparently, it was a really good launch too.
Yeah, it looks to be pretty solid. So, in terms of myself, I did boot it up on my computer. I can't even tell you when can I find what my things are? Device manager? No, computer management. There we go. Nope, that didn't tell me at all. Either way, my PC is a thing. it's got bits in it. It's got parts in it. Max, where can I tell you what my parts are?
Oh, wow. I think that's a whole discussion for a different show, my friend.
Nice. System. There we go. All right, hang on. Oh, we've blocked that. So I'm running a 13th gen i5
600 KF,
3.5 gigahertz, 32 gigs of RAM. My graphics card is, where are we? Display adapters. It is a GeForce NVIDIA RTX 4070 Ti. I don't know what any of that means, but my good mate Ethan built my PC. What I love about it is I turned the game on and it went, you should be playing on very high. I'm like, oh, very high. I want to play on ultra. There is no ultra. So I smashed it and I was really happy with myself because, you know, for years I've had like adequate PCs. So I've never had that like beautiful moment of booting up and it just rocks my shorts. And this did exactly that. So Horizon Forbidden West was already an incredibly beautiful game, stunning game. And then booting up here on my PC with this lovely, the Gigabyte M28U monitor, 4K monitor, was 144 hertz. Putting it at 4K, putting it at maximum frameage, good HDRs. Dear God, what an experience it was. So I certainly understand the appeal of PC gaming, by the way. And then the second I tried to play the game with mouse and keyboard, it all fell apart.
Why didn't you just plug your controller in?
That would have made sense. But I was like, well, I'm playing on PC. I'm gonna play it with the mouse and keyboard for a little while. I'm totally gonna switch it back. I've already played the game, and we have enough other games that we should be playing them instead. But I was really appreciative of that code coming through by absolute surprise. Booted up, very happy with it. Game looks awesome. Anyone that questions that game as visual fidelity, you're dumb. Game is brilliant.
Nixus doing work.
Nixus are absolutely worth every cent that Sony have chosen to put into them to bring them in as that porting house. But anyway, let's get into the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Max?
This week in PlayStation, we have some internal investigations, apparently.
Ooh.
So Sony is reportedly undertaking an internal investigation to determine how exactly the specs for Trinity, the code name for the PS5 Pro, is internally known, leaked. The incident occurred during a third-party developer rollout, and while we may never learn the corporate's identity, there will undoubtedly be additional security ramifications for other third-party developers moving forward. Insider Gaming's Tom Henderson has said that an internal investigation is already underway at the firm. Henderson's sources confirmed the veracity of the leaked documents detailed by YouTuber Moore's Law is dead over the weekend, and it remains to be seen what the outcome of the incident will be, but the noted insider suggests that Sony will reduce the pool of third-party developers trusted with the new tech is one potential possibility.
It is one of those things that you kind of wonder, like, who leaked said info? And there's got to be someone.
Phil Spencer.
God damn, Phil Spencer, you bastard. Because maybe they sent it across as part of the MLB, you know, to the Xbox peeps, funny.
Call of Duty?
Or Activision? Yeah, probably Call of Duty. Yeah, I didn't think about that. That makes way more sense. Yeah. But, yeah, it does bring in a question. And it is interesting that they're doing an internal investigation because it makes sense, right? It is like, you know, the headline is like, you know, who leaked PS5 specs? Which is kind of intriguing. And like,
Jim the janitor.
Yeah, like, is it a circumstance of someone willingly gave it away? Was there someone in the room that shouldn't have been? Did someone leave the specs on a train like that Assassin's Creed shit that one time? Or was it Tomb Raider? No, it was Tomb Raider. Where someone left that Tomb Raider shit on that train one time? Like, what is it? And it's one of those things where, like, Moore's Law is dead is a reliable source. Like, yeah, they get things wrong occasionally, but they're reliable, right? Everyone has get shit wrong. Even the beloved Tom Henderson, who we've mentioned, has got shit wrong sometimes. It's what, you know, it's part of the game. It's part of the deal. What do you think the ramifications of it, of this leak, should be, Max? Do you believe they should be hung, drawn, and quartered?
It depends on who it was.
That's really a real question, like, really, but I appreciate your honest answer.
Realistically, it depends on who it was. Like, okay. if it's let's go bottom of the barrel here. The meeting's done. They've left their papers on the floor. Cleaners come in, throw them in the bin. Someone's rifled through the bin. Ooh, here's the specs.
Mm-hmm.
Not his fault. He fucking leaked them. Threw out rubbish. It's not his fault.
As the cleaner yourself, you would understand that.
You fucking left your shit lying around. But if fucking Jimbo Ryan's like, you know what? You guys have fucking ousted me. Here you go. Here we go. He's the fucking spec.
Whoa, Jim, you've heard it here first. You know, take it with a grain of salt, but Jim Ryan leaks PS5 Pro specs.
You know what I mean? Like, there is...
The intent is what you're saying.
Context and intent needs to be understood before you can be like, they should definitely be incarcerated for this. Like... It depends on the circumstances.
But yes, that is true. Yeah, because if an NDA is involved, so a legally binding document is involved, that's a little different. Because you can still breach an NDA by, like, incorrectly disposing of documents or incorrectly storing documents. Hi, Donald, you know, old DJ Trump over there, you know, with just storing shit in a bathroom one of his hotels. Like, that in itself is a class, you know, concern. I'm not saying that fucking the leaking PS5 Pro specs is anything close to the nuclear codes that were hanging out in a fucking bathroom sink. How it gets out is incredibly important. Do you think we'll get an answer to this? No, not at all. No one's going to go, yeah, it was me, eh? Not going to happen.
If the investigation turns something up, they're not going to announce it to the public.
No, that person's just going to be like, you know, taken to a back room and disappeared.
It brings to mind the scene of American Gods where technology boys in the limo and those faceless mannequins just like, fuck the dude up.
But
PlayStation logos on their faces.
Well, they kind of look like PlayStation logos, so it is kind of on the money.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the things that did come out as part of this leaked information about the PS5 Pro is the discussion around what's referred to as PSSR, which is the PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution. So according to these rumors and reports, as I mentioned, Sony is working on its own reconstruction technology similar to that of DLSS or Deep Learning Super Sampling that is used on NVIDIA graphics cards. The feature named PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution, according to the Insider Gaming, seems like a long-term play by the platform holder, with the first iteration being planned for the PS5 Pro. One key feature of the aforementioned PSSR, which will help the upgraded system to achieve 4K resolution at 60 frames per second or up to 8K resolution at 30. Looking ahead to the PS6, it seems Sony wants to realize 4K at 120 and 8K at 60 within its tech. The idea with reconstruction techniques like this is that the games can be rendered at lower resolutions, reducing computation overheads. The technology then upscales the overall image with no discernible compromises to quality. The idea is that you're seeing a crisp 4K or even 8K image, but the hardware can be pushed in different areas because it's not having to render those pictures at a full native resolution. So looking, if you look deeper into the specs that were given out or leaked or potentially the ones, the CPU itself is drastically not all that altered. It's slightly not overclocked, but it's got a bit more oomph into it. Some of the graphics potential has been separated to allow for more CPU support, but the GPU is what has been given the most support. I think it's about 10%, 20%, somewhere around there. You know, where everything else is pretty much the same. Things more, it might be more RAM, but mostly the same. So people kind of forget about systems like DLSS. So PlayStation previously had been using that checkerboard rendering approach, where the idea is that essentially like every second thing is in the upscales to 4K. To put it in layman's terms, if your game can run a clean 60 at 720p, which some games do, you can use systems like this, which are AI generated, but in a good way, to help upscale that game to that desired resolution. There are, excuse me, it's not seamless, as in that it is visible in certain scenarios, but most of the time, if implemented correctly, you can bump that game without an issue. So say if you're running on a sort of a lower, you know, mid-range PC, you know, you want to play a game at, you know, bump the DLSS up, it's only running at 1080, it's bumping to 1440, you're getting a smoother frames.
Yeah.
I believe that this is something that these consoles have needed for the longest time. Now, granted, they had a mild version of it, but if this is anything like DLSS, this has the potential to greatly assist performance moving forward. Because one of the things that we've discussed a numerous amount of times is the standard should now be 1080-60, but ideally 4K-60. That where it needs to be. Like, it's all well, like, who gives a flying fuck about 8K? The box of my PS5 that I have says it has 8K potential. Bullshit, it does. I hadn't seen dick come out of that thing at 8K. And the proliferation of 8K supported monitors is so low that you are absolutely wasting your time. But once again, we understand these are maximum potential in the same way that we talk about, you know, talk about teraflops or whatever. That is the maximum potential of what that computing power can do, not actually what it is delivering. Max, as a bit more of a tech head than me, especially when it comes to PC things, how do you look at this?
I'm in the same boat as you. I think consoles have needed this for a very long time, and it just takes the excess strain off the hardware. In theory, it should allow them to make cheaper boxes going forward, but not compromise on fidelity of graphics.
Yeah. Because it is one of those things, because the podcast that I was listening to, they were talking about how the telemetry is that 70% of people that play games play in fidelity mode. They don't play in performance mode. So for most people, it's about the game looking as beautiful as it can for some reason.
It's just fucking baffling to me.
I have someone that's turned the corner probably in the last like 5-6 years. And the PS4 Pro was kind of the thing that did it for me when most games were kind of bumped up to support a higher frame rate. And when the beginnings of that performance and versus fidelity mode were implemented, I went, ooh. Oh, I like performance. That's what I play now.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love pretty things, but I would prefer smooth.
Bless you. Another one? Bless you again.
Yeah, I would prefer a smooth, stutter-free play than something looking good and bouncing around the place.
Yeah, so a game that's like that's released this week, like
Dragon's Dogma?
Thank you. I always get that fucking Darkest Dungeon mixed up. Dragon's Dogma 2 came out this week, and apparently it has a bit of a rough run in terms of how it runs.
Well, yeah, it runs to an uncapped 30 frames.
Yeah.
Which means it has the potential to go higher, but most of the time it's lower.
Yeah. And apparently, like, it's all CPU limited is what I was sort of getting to. So if you... which this, the way to think about it, CPU is the brains of your computer, of your console. So is there anything you wish to achieve from a thought process, like players, well, the world, mechanics?
I'll spoil one of the quick bit stories. Players in Dragon's Dogma 2 have started upping their frame rate by slaying NPCs that don't respawn.
Yep, so they go into areas where they just kill a bunch of folk, and therefore the game is no longer having to render as many individuals and plan their logic or whatever it is they wish to do. So they just fucking kill them. Mass genocide benefits gameplay quality. Bizarre. Yep.
PlayStation have pressed pause on VR. Sony has allegedly paused production of its PSVR 2 headset while it works to clear out a surplus of stock, according to an article by Bloomberg journalist Takashi Mochizuki, who has had his stories corrected by the manufacturer in the past. The article, citing unnamed sources, quote, familiar with the firm's plans, claims the platform holder has stopped producing new units of its new gen virtual reality peripheral while it works to clear a quote a backlog of unsold units. It adds that sales of the accessory have slowed progressively since its launch in February of last year, despite the manufacturer making over 2 million units. Despite impressing at launch with titles like Horizon Call of the Mountain and an incredible Gran Turismo 7 update, first party support of the peripheral has been next to non-existent, and Sony just killed a few of its studios that worked on VR games.
Sure did.
So Sony has been relying heavily on third-party partners like Capcom and indie studios to keep the device afloat, while software releases regularly on the PlayStation Store, very little of it is catching mainstream attention.
So we share a PSVR 2, so we're helping to this not moving units, but this is so fucking expensive. And admittedly, you and I never really play it.
So there's a vicious cycle, Ryan.
Oh.
This is the vicious cycle. They need games to sell the units, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they need to sell units for people to justify making the games to sell those units.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And it's just this vicious circle going around in circles. They're like, but we made 2 million units, but you're not selling those units, so we're not selling games. But we've made these units, you need to make games. But we're not making these games because we're not selling these games because no one's buying the units that you've made. Vicious circle.
Well, because, yeah, say you've made 2 million PSVR 2 headsets. That is made. Not sold, made. So if they're halting production, how many need to sit in a warehouse for them to make that call? Now, I'm not smart enough to know that answer. Anything we would say would be absolutely speculative. But it's like, is there 10,000? 20,000? 30,000? 50,000? Like, how many... What's the number? 200,000? How many units are sitting in a warehouse around the world for them to go, oh, we should stop making them?
I think I only know, like, 3 people who have a PSVR 2 headset. Yeah.
Are we one of them?
We are one of them. My parents are the other person.
Oh. So they also share one. So technically, you know 2 units.
I know 2 units.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Like, and it's hard because, like, you know, we also received a code this week, fucking busy week, for a VR game called Forest Farm, which is a farming game in VR. Ticks all my boxes, right? I should totally be playing it. Once again, being very busy this week. But I'm like, it's been warm. I want to put the VR headset on my face. But now it's getting colder, so maybe I will. And I totally will, because, like, we got given the code. I want to play the game. But it is that hurdle, as you mentioned, is that vicious cycle. And, you know, VR, for whatever reason, doesn't have the same appeal that it did X amount of years ago. Whether that be that we've been there, done that, okay. Is it because there's so many competitors on the market now? Like, I can't remember the last time that there was buzz about a VR game. The most recent things, I wouldn't say VR headset, because obviously the Apple Pro Vision or whatever the hell gets people all kinds of boned up to spend $1,500 on a headset because they're dumb. But
who spent a $1,500 on them? Keep going.
Well, I don't know anyone. That's they're dumb.
No, I think they're more than that.
Oh, I think that's the US price. I think they're $3,000.
They are $6,500 in Australia.
That is so much worse. All right, well, there you go. So if no one's buying fucking PSVR 2...
A base model 256 gig, motherfucker.
That is disgusting. Disgusting. Now, granted, it has a lot of advantages, but it's also it's just Apple putting Apple prices on things. Apparently, I'm sure it's all cool tech, but it's not worth that. The overhead on that must be insane. Just the absolute profit. Blech. Yeah, I can't remember the last one there being a VR game. The one I can think of is Half-Life Alyx. And that's still not come across. PlayStation have looked at, you know, the rumor mill we talked about a couple of weeks ago was that they're looking at ways to be able to play your PSVR 2 on your PC. Once again, great PC. Happy to do so. Would like to play it on the console. But what, there are the games that have came, the inability to be backwards compatible is a problem. Because there were some cool VR games on PSVR 1 that I'd probably be open to playing. But if I have to rebuy them, if I have to not have access to them at all, not cool. Not cool. And it's a bummer.
I really want to keep talking and nobody explodes on PSVR.
Yeah. Where's Keep Talking? Where's what was the other game? I Expect You to Die. That game was tons of fun. You're like a shitty James Bond villain where it's essentially little escape rooms. Games, rules. Had so much fun with that game. So I was on PSVR 1.
Did Super Hot come across?
Has it? It would make sense if it has. Super Hot. Drum roll.
No,
there's a problem.
I don't think so. Not that I can see. Unless I'm just like blind.
Well, we'll assume it's a problem until we work out, you know. Do minimal research, make strong claims. That's how it works.
Get on the PlayStation. You go for the next one.
Is it my
one.
Turn?
I think it's your up anyway.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'll all right. Among Us.
Next news story. I said it's Among Us. The first wave of voice actors confirmed to be cast in the upcoming Among Us animated series has been revealed. And it's surprisingly star-studded affair. Randall Park, name I doesn't ring a bell, is playing Red, the captain of the Skeld. Perhaps best known for his role in the sitcom Fresh Off the Boat. Never watch it. Fellow serial star Yvette Nicole Brown, yes, Community Shirley, that's nice. Will portray Orange, the ship's resident spineless corporate shill, in quotations. Frodo Baggins himself, Elijah Wood, will be playing Green, who is an unpaid intern who's, quote, just happy to be there, end quote. Lastly, one of the video games industry's most prolific talents, Ashley Johnson, best known for The Last of Us and a thousand other amazing things, will be playing Purple, the Skeld, sarcastic chief of security.
You know Randall Park, he played Kim Jong-un in The Interview.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't mean he'll be good in this movie, but all right, sure. I guess on the back of, you know, Last of Us and a bunch of other things, is this something that you want?
This is so dumb. Is it like a procedural fucking drama? Like, what is it? Is it a movie? Is it a TV show?
It's an animated series, I guess. Because it's one of those things where normally the character...
Well, animated series, yeah. So it's a TV series.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it is one of those things where I look at this and I see it as... Because they're like, well, how could this be a movie? How could this be a series? It's Glass Onion. It's Clue. It's, you know, it is a murder mystery, and that is how they'll deliver it. They'll deliver this game, this show, as if it's a murder mystery. There's your answer.
I actually think it would more play in line to like those
whodunit.
They could go that way, but it's like those stupid fucking reality TV shows where they do tasks on an island to fucking...
Oh, see, that is actually a better idea than what I had. Well,
And then they go to fucking tribal council and they vote each other out. Like,
well, yeah, they do go... They call an emergency meeting. And, okay, all right. Ooh. Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, who knows?
Back to work.
Or is it just like a fucking happy tree friends and they just bullshit for 5 minutes and everyone dies?
That would be cool too. It's like a little short. So it's like, you know, 5-10 minute things and it's just people getting killed in bizarre ways.
Or is it people just Or are they just getting fucking people to just play the game? And they're just gonna
record, you know,
it.
What it is? They're going to do a real, like all these, like when they did reboot the Guardian Code. It's not about reboot anymore. Like, there are a bunch of people that get sucked into a game and then they become the characters. That's what it'll be. It'll be Jumanji. There's your three choices. It's Jumanji, it's a reality show, or it's a whodunit. You can lock them into a bank, but we gave just enough variability that that prediction can still be wrong and we still might be right. While you're clearly Googleizing, Max, I'm going to jump into the next bit of news. Veteran, hang on one sec, got to put that timestamp down. Veteran Sony executive Connie Booth, who had exited PlayStation after a 30-year career, had made a surprising move that is, Veteran Sony executive Connie Booth exited PlayStation after a 30-year career at the firm, which was a surprising move that caused some confusion late last year, including outspoken God of War creator David Jaffe, who let the cat out of the bag on social media. We still currently don't know the full details on her departure or whether the split was amicable, but we do know where Booth will end up next. Booth has accepted the very impressive sounding title of Group General Manager, Action RPG at Electronic Arts. In an exclusive statement secured by IGN, EA Entertainment head Laura Miel announced the news, revealing that Booth's portfolio of studios will include EA Motive, who are currently handling an Iron Man game, Cliffhanger, currently handling a Black Panther game, and the previously famous BioWare, who are currently working on Dragon Age and Mass Effect. Booth will reportedly direct to Melee and help Electronic Arts lead its studios through its ongoing restructuring, where her expertise will no doubt prove invaluable. Quote, Connie spent more than 30 years helping to build Sony Interactive Entertainment's internal studios and is responsible for guiding the development of some of their biggest franchises, including Marvel Spider-Man 1 and 2, The Last of Us, Ghost of Tsushima, Uncharted, Ratchet & Clank, to name just a few, end quote. Bringing Booth on board is a significant coup for EA, which could use someone of that caliber to help drive the direction of critical franchises, specifically Mass Effect and Dragon Age. Dragon Age, Grindelwald, whatever the fuck it's called, Direwolf.
Dreadwolf.
Whatever, is coming out at the back end of this year, and that's how much I care about it.
I don't think
granted, her employment will likely not affect that game because it is in its late development, is likely in its final phasing. So anything she could do, we'd hope. Anything she could contribute is minimal at this point. Yeah. Mass Effect, however, if they are doing another one for a reason, then that is where we will likely see her greatest impact. Now, to add to that, she's an individual that was around before Sony created PlayStation. So she gets it. She knows it. She's lived it. I said 30 years in the industry. It is an absolute win for whomever we're going to pick them up. EA is someone that I think needs it the most, especially looking at their recent track history. And one thing we've discussed before is that, you know, EA needs to do things to step out of those sports games. For some, that is the best thing that they can do. However, even for us, it's not ideal. Like, they step out of it sometimes, like with Immortals of Avium last year, didn't handle it all that well. Avalanche got poo-pooed, got rid of a bunch of folk. Are you in a position where you feel hopeful, enticed by this acquisition of a person?
I mean, it's definitely good news, especially for EA. It can't make anything worse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. EA, it'll be good, especially to stick Booth in the RPG section, where their last few have been very hit and miss. I still wish fucking, what was that mech game, Anthem. I still wish Anthem was good.
Yeah,
man, I loved Anthem so much. So hopefully they Connie can prevent something like that from happening again, because Mass Effect and Dragon Age used to be the kings of RPGs, and now
who did?
Kind of laughed at. So
same as EA Motive. I remember EA Motive having a lot of love. Let me do a quick look at. It's off the top of my head. I can't remember what they have done, but in my head, they have like that. Yeah, here we go. Motive are only a recent studio. That's interesting. I thought they were older. They did Battlefront 2, Squadrons, and Dead Space. So, like... Huh?
The remake.
It was founded within by Jade Raymond. Oh, okay. By former... Okay, interesting. I was under the impression the Motive was around. Who am I thinking? Who's the one that, that's been... That made the Frostbite engine? Who the fuck are they? And that's also... Is that EA?
Yeah, it's Frostbite.
God damn, my meds are hard wearing out. My memory is hot poo. I'm trying to think of that team.
DICE.
Thank you. I was thinking of DICE.
The Battlefield guys?
Yeah, them guys. They're them ones. Yeah, DICE. so look, cool. You know, once again, they're a studio that are, now that changes my thoughts on it, I guess, in a little bit, in that what we're seeing is a studio that is in its infancy, really, with only 4 games under its belt. One of them being quite contentious with Battlefront 2. Squadrons I really enjoyed. Dead Space was exceptional. But once again, it was a remake of a pre-established game. So having someone like Connie Booth, who is a great producer, coming in and assisting them, is certainly in the good space. Where BioWare, dear God, do they need some sorting out.
Quick bits?
Yes.
All right. Rumor has it the GTA 6 could slip into 2026 due to developmental issues.
Well, not a surprise, but once again, this is a game that will take as long as it needs to get out. The only concern is the amount of games that would have tried to dodge it. Now, are they going to bring their games forward, or are they going to dodge it again?
Yeah, I know there's a... I was reading an article today. Someone was releasing DLC for a game, but it was right when Shadows of the Erdtree was dropping, and they're like, fuck that.
Yeah.
we're just going to move.
Well, that's why we're playing Alone in the Dark now in March, compared to its original date of October. They just went, yeah, we can't compete with Spider-Man. We'll see you in March.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 16, the Rising Tide DLC dropping April 18th. As we mentioned before, Dragon's Dogma 2 players killing mass NPCs to boost frame rates. But that's not the big Dragon's Dogma 2 news. Apparently, everyone hates the fact that they just fucking added a ton of microtransactions to the game.
So, from my understanding, very similar to the example that I used was Crash Team Racing, where the game didn't have microtransactions during its review period. Everyone's praised it for not having them. Boom, out they come. Is that right?
I really want to play this game, so I haven't looked at any reviews whatsoever. So I don't know if the reviewers were like, it has no microtransaction, this is fucking great. I always work under the assumption these days that all games will have microtransactions in some shape.
And
or
Capcom
form.
Have done it. We look at Resident Evil Village, we look at Resident Evil 4, like their biggest releases, Monster Hunters that have come out, loaded.
So my big gripe is it with this that everyone's been saying is it's pay to win. It's a fucking single player game. If people want to pay for convenience, that's their prerogative.
However,
it doesn't affect the way that you play your game. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, I agree and disagree in that, yes, in principle, totally true. But if we look over at games like Assassin's Creed, we look at whether it be Origins, Odyssey, or Valhalla, those games were purposefully hindered to make you spend money. Like, all the level gating and just the bullshit, the grind that those games forced you to do under the proviso that it thinks that it could push you to spend money. That is the concern. Well, and as mutes on your mute in our chat is on your side as well, while you're not forced to buy them, and that is absolutely true. However, if the game itself is then built in such a way that it you are at a distinct disadvantage.
So the things that they're selling are premium currencies, teleport crystals,
which are
and revive crystals,
fast travel.
Yeah, fast travel crystals and revives. That's what they're selling.
Okay.
All of these things can be earned in-game. Sure, they're going to take longer than clicking buy now on your fucking PayPal account, but they are earnable. It's not like, oh, you can kill the griffin once per day, but if you buy this item, you can fucking spawn it an infinite amount of times. That would be gross.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing is that all through the development cycle of this game, the team were like, you don't need fast travel in your game. If you have to have fast travel in your game, it means your game is fucking bland and boring, and the moment to moment's not fun. And then they've added these to kind of, because in this day and age, people like to do things quickly. They like the ability to fast travel. Sure, you miss those little moment to moment things, but again, it's a single player game. I would prefer someone to be able to spend $5 and make their time with a game more convenient and at least experience the game than be like, I don't have time for this, so I'm just not going to play it at all. And as someone who's recently lost a lot of their game playing time by having children, I like having those options available.
Okay. Yeah.
These would be more egregious if it was a multiplayer game. Sure, they would be classified as pay to win. And I agree with that. But it's a fucking single player game. Let people play it how they want to fucking play it. If you don't want to buy the DLC, if you don't want to buy them, just fucking don't. It's not hard.
Yeah. But yeah.
The other big one was the game's only got one save. So the fucking first game. This isn't surprising.
Yeah. That one, I shut up on that one. Yeah, I agree.
I didn't think they were going to change it. They've set a precedent. They want you to feel the consequences of your actions by not allowing you to save scum. That is why every NPC has permanent death. Mm-hmm. They want this world to have consequences for your actions, and they can't do that if you can save it 30 fucking times after every dialogue choice.
But in itself, doesn't the introduction of microtransactions counteract that? If they want you to have the consequence of action, if you don't do the things you need to obtain those items, the consequence is you can't use them.
I think there's a difference between going, and I know it's a really shit analogy, but like, it's like the difference between walking to a party or catching an Uber. I'm still going to get the same experience. One's just faster and more expensive.
Yeah, true.
and convenient.
However,
the walk isn't going to make me appreciate my beer more when I get to the pub. Like,
it would if it's a 45-minute drive or it's a 45-minute walk or a 3-minute Uber. I don't know what kind of fucking terrain has that level of discrepancy, but yeah, if it's like you're in an Uber for 5 minutes, you're walking for 45, that beer is going to be awesome in 5 minutes compared to 45 minutes from now.
So like, you know, it's a single player game. Let people spend their money if they want to spend it. Fuck it. At least they're experiencing the game as opposed to missing out because they're like, I don't have time for a 50-plus-hour game. I don't see the problem with it. Single-player games.
I neither have the time nor the money. So what does that say? Where does that put me, Max? Huh? Do I have to get a new hobby?
I think to buy all of the microtransactions, I think it works out to be like $23. Like they're not even like it's not even like egregiously priced.
All right, okay.
Well. Let me just pull up my Steam. I'll fact check myself real quick.
Well, this is the same circumstance where I'm like, well, once again, knowing that we got Helldivers for as a review code, I'm like, well, I'm happily open to spending the money for the battle pass for Helldivers. Yeah. Or the upgrade to the WrestleMania edition of 2K because we only got the deluxe edition. Oh, we only got the deluxe edition, Ryan, you fucking bum.
Yeah, so my issue is if you have to pay for items that should have been in the game already.
Like, so, New Game Plus is the one that we have a lot of contention with.
Yeah, like fucking New Game Plus with like a Dragon Infinite Wealth doesn't have New Game Plus if you buy the standard edition. You have to pay for it. That is a feature that has been in every other game and should therefore be in this one. We should not have to pay for it.
I agree. That's right.
Okay, so
are these all one-off purchases too?
I believe so, because they're each listed differently. So, like, for instance, there's the wake stones, which are the restoratives. There's wake stone A, B, C, D, and E. So I'm assuming that there's they're one-off purchases. I could be wrong, but it would be really weird for them to have fucking multiple of the same thing. So the most expensive one is $750 for the in-game currency, for the like the biggest pool.
I imagine that is reoccurring purchases.
I would imagine so. But in saying that, there's one for 2,500, and then there's three for 1,500 and three for 500, so they may not be.
Mm.
But again, yeah, $750 is the most expensive, with the average price for your teleport stones and resurrection stones at $1.50.
Cool.
Or you can spend half an hour grinding them out in-game, because they're purchasable in-game. And they're craftable in-game. It's just, it's literally just a time saving thing. I don't see a problem with it. And if people have a problem with it, just don't buy them.
Yeah,
it really doesn't ruin your experience if someone else wants to do it.
Yeah, that is the one thing. It doesn't take away from your experience. Once again, presuming during development they haven't actively hindered the game to incentivize you to spend that money.
Yeah.
The thing is, Max, we cannot trust developmental teams or distributors or whatever publishers to not do that.
Just get good and don't die, then you won't need to buy resurrection stones. It's fine.
That's not possible. I'm shit.
Just don't throw your pawns off cliffs like you can.
Oh, okay, that's a pretty good idea then. I won't do that.
Fine. Although it's so funny. There's a clip going around that I saw. Basically, you're fighting a griffin. The griffin's flying around, and you fall off the griffin. And one of your pawns is like, "I got you, buddy," and he fucking catches you.
Hey.
Like a 60-foot fall.
Oh. How very Superman 2 of him.
Next up, The Sims is being turned into a movie with Margot Robbie's producing firm to lead things.
All right. Okay. Now, this is kind of as dumb as The Among Us, but however, this game / movie could be the best thing in the world if they really double down on the idea. Now, this has the potential to be the same sort of, oh no, suddenly we're in a game.
It's The Block.
If it's The Block, the movie, and they have to be... Like, as long as we get, you know, the Mortimers, you know, the family that's in every fucking Sims game that live next door, someone gets really confused by there being a plate in front of a doorway, for whatever reason, someone's, like, the shot is they're looking at this person, that person looks over there, they come back, and the stairs are gone from the pool. Beautiful. As long as there's that little sneaky guy, that little burglar guy from Sims 1 who comes in and, like, nicks your shit. Okay, sick. I want someone to piss themselves. I want someone to set fire to the fucking kitchen. I want them to make a baby exactly the same way as they do in Sims, which is just fuzzy sheets moving everywhere. A baby to appear out of fucking nowhere. People to age rapidly. I want someone to put in the fucking infinite money cheat.
And lastly, we finally have a title for Amy Hennig's Marvel game coming out in 2025, and that is Marvel 1943 Rise of the Hydra.
So this was shown off at GDC, I believe, and it looks fucking stupid. Like, stupid good. Like, the capture of the, like, the lip sync and the faces between he kind of looks like the Captain America out of, like, Falcon the Winter Soldier, which is a bit odd. And then there's the guy who they've got the 1940s Black Panther. Like, okay, cool. It's one of those weird things, Max, where I like it in its principle. Will I play it? Probably. But, like, I don't know. It's more Marvel, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, that does bring us to the end of the show. That is all the news done. That is all the games we've been playing. Bit of a long one this week, but we do appreciate each and every one of you taking the time to sit down and listen to this. You know, talking about it before, time is one of the most precious commodities that we have, and you chose to do it with us without even spending money. If you want to, you can give us $5 to fucking make the show go faster. Will it happen? No, but I'll take the money.
There's two games of note that I know of coming out this week, and I believe that is Open Roads is coming out March 28th. for PS5 and PS4, and South Park Snow Day is coming out.
Oh, yeah!
2 days. 2 days. South Park.
Man,
I think that's it, though.
I want that South Park game so bad.
I don't know anything else.
It looks awesome. Like it's more of like an arena shooter by the looks compared to, say, the RPGs that were Stick of Truth and The Fractured Butthole. But it's South Park, so I'm already sold. It's easy.
Cool.
Your turn.
Alrighty, everybody. It was a long one, wasn't it? This PlayStation Conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can. Come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures. We can watch us record this show live. We can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to it on podcast servers, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other sort of shit with our logos on it. Now, it does appear there was some issue with Spotify this week. That has since been rectified. So for any of you that did have, for whatever reason, miss out, everything is back up and running on that platform. Sick. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players. Was there anything that you'd want to see in the Sims movie? Like, what's your must?
Oh, fireworks in the fucking house. Killing death with fireworks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.